Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy and Joel, and you are listening to Revive Thoughts.
For when they designed to kill him, he neither altered his teaching nor betrayed those who believed in him, but stood firm and chose to die.
Every episode, we bring you a different voice from history in a sermon that they delivered. Today, we're going back to 1826 in Connecticut to listen to a sermon by John Chrysostom. Troy, how's it going?
It's going well. I don't want to be like mean there, Joel. It's going to sound like a jerk move, but like you really impressed. You like nailed Chrysostom first try. Like it was nothing.
You know,
like you've done it 100 times before.
6 years of doing Revive Thoughts. How long have we been doing this?
It's been over 6 years.
It's rubbing off on me a little bit that I can actually maybe occasionally pronounce some of these names correctly every once in a while. So yeah, Chrysostom, one of the ones I got locked. Don't hold me to that standard with anyone else. But
man, I still remember one of our very first episodes where we put out an episode and we said a very prominent theologian pastor's name completely dead wrong and
repeatedly.
Repeat for the entire episode, and we could not have said it more if we tried. And yeah, that, now looking back, I'm like, oh, poor guy. Not going to say who it is because it's too embarrassing, but it was rough. But anyway, so all right, John Chrysostom, though, things are going good over here. Joel, how's everything going with you?
Going good. It's cold. Winter is officially here.
Yeah.
Could use a little bit of that Indonesian climate.
I was just going to say that we haven't had any cold. That's so weird. Normally it's... it's actually funny. So we've lived in Southeast Asia for at this point, I think 5.5 maybe it's 4.5. Anyway, it's about 5 years of the time that Revive Thoughts has been going. And everyone said, you know, when you first move here, you feel hot, but eventually you'll get cold and wear a jacket, you know, and I'm like, okay. And I've seen people who've been out here for like a year or two wearing jackets, like, oh, it's so cold. I never feel that. I never feel cold. I never feel even chilly. I once in a while feel not hot, and it's a beautiful feeling. And I feel like I'm left out here. Like I never acclimated. What happened? Like I remember. You remember, Joel, in college. I was from Florida. I got really cold easily because I had grown up in Florida. I feel like I should have adjusted to Southeast Asia quicker. And I've got these Minnesotans and people from northern cold places wearing jackets in like 90 degree weather here, and I'm not feeling cold ever.
Not in your blood, huh? Never it's adapted. Not.
I never did. I've adapted, I feel like, in some other ways, but I've never adapted to the temperature. And I just go, what happened? Why did it skip over me? I'm sure I'm doing something wrong. I'm sure if they looked at me, they'd be like, oh, it's pretty obvious you're doing X, Y, or Z. But I don't want to hear their corrections. I just want to complain. So.
Have you Googled it? Have you Googled how to...
You know, I actually have Googled and spent time looking at how to acclimate to weather.
Yeah.
And I am convinced that nobody fully knows how to do it. Because
you get everything
from like your blood is thicker or thinner, which I think can be true, but all the scientists say that's not true. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. To like you have to wear a burqa on hot days and then eventually you'll start convincing yourself hot is cold. And I'm like, that sounds hot to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm already hot, why would I wear a jacket and make myself hotter? I don't know. So it's a science. I'm sure there's ways to do it. It's kind of like, how do you beat jet lag or how do you get rid of the hiccups? Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own method and it's questionable if it really works, but it seems to work for them.
That's true. It's right. A field rife for made up conspiracies.
If you're like, man, it seems like every field has you know, there's somebody already got a Sun Rock seller in there. You could be the first to tackle the weather acclimation people. You might not have that many customers because how many people are moving to Indonesia? But you know what? I mean, people switch states. New Yorkers move to Florida. They need some weather acclimations, and that's where you can get in there and sell them your whatever it is you sell, essential oil or something. Well, essential oil is not a... Oh, boy, that might offend people. But anyway, it's you know what I'm saying, that thing.
Troy, we got some Spotify recap.
We do. We got some recaps. I like Spotify Wrapped. They do this thing every year where people will, you know, I'm not going to explain Spotify Wrapped. You've seen it around. You understand. And they do it for podcasts as well. And Tim said, hey, Revive Thoughts, you got my top spot. We were in this guy, Tim, top 2% listener with 1,520 minutes of listening in the last year. And I got to say, Tim, fantastic. But can we go higher? You know, can we do even bigger? That's pretty good.
Have we tallied up how many minutes we have? That might be all of the episode.
I didn't do the math. So I apologize. I came unprepared. It seems, it can't be all of the, it's got to be like 30 something. It's got to be about every episode this year, though, I think. Yeah. It's got to be a lot of them. But I looked at this and I was like, Tim, you're in the top 2%. What is it? Like, not that that's not impressive. You're beating 98% of listeners on Spotify. We don't know what the people on Apple or other Podcast Addict or whatever are doing. What does it take to get a top 1%? How do you top 1,000 minutes plus of listening? I'm curious. But thank you, Tim, for listening. And to all the other people out there who have Spotify Wrapped, if you have one mentioning us, please tag us. I will try to read them on future episodes. I think they're pretty fun. It's fun to see how much you are out there listening. And I like it. Even if you're not, it's okay. Even if you're not top 2%, if you're the lower tier, if you're still getting a Spotify Wrapped and we show up, it's okay. We want to hear from you. Some more things from Spotify Wrapped, by the way. We were considered a 2025 marathon show because it was something like 98% of like listeners listened for an hour, like, and it was kind of hard to see, but basically it was like you listened to this podcast for a long time, so that was kind of nice. Thank you, Spotify people. You're listening all the way through to the end. We appreciate that. 2025 talked about show, we were in the top 97%. That sounds like we made 3%. We're in the top 3% of 2025 talked about shows. We got the 97% rankings, if that makes sense. And we were in the 98% for sharing. So again, top 2% show for sharing. Thank you for sharing. That's what I'm trying to say. We were talked about show. Thank you, Spotify. Those made me feel nice. I have some interesting facts about our fans. According to Spotify, our fans' top artist this year is Forrest Frank. Have you been to the Forrest Frank, Joel? Have you visited that forest?
You know, my relationship with music is such that I'm out of touch with what's cool and hip these days. But, you know, if Spotify is saying Forrest Frank is what our listeners listen to, maybe we should be listening to it as well.
I'm definitely with you on that. Like, I listen to a lot of just whatever's random on YouTube because it's been free my whole life. And so I listen to, like, this one church. I don't even know where they're located, but I listen to, like, a lot of their worship music. It's not a big name. Like, if I say the church, you're not going to be like, oh, Hillsong? I've heard of them. No, it's, like, Village Chapel Worship. I don't know. They have, like, 1,000 views per video, and I'm one of them, even though I don't go to their church. And then I'm
a real fan.
I am. It just is like, I'm like, the way they sing the hymns is upbeat and nice in a way that I like. It's not like sad and depressing, and they don't change all the words. So it's exactly what I'm looking for in a hymn. And it's just like stuff like that. So I'm not super hip with Forrest Frank. So I'm going to give him a listen, and then I'm going to come back and judge you, listener. Were you correct? Spotify listeners. And then a fan's top audiobook, I actually felt like really fit. So people who listen to our podcast, their number one audiobook is Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. That really makes sense. But if you are listening to the audiobook, do know that we have our own Sinners in the Hand of Anger. Okay, you can still listen to ours. Okay, Revive Thoughts top countries. Number one, United States. That's not surprising. Number two, Canada. That is surprising. Number three, United Kingdom. Number four, Australia. And number five, South Africa. And I noticed, you know, you probably picked up on this too, places where they speak English is where our listeners tend to be. We are a number one show for 168 fans. Thank you, fans. We are a top five show for 815 of you. A top 10 show for 1,300 of you. So keep it up. But we can do even better next year. We can listen even harder. Listening time is 300. So if you add up all of our listeners on Spotify listening time, it ended up being that they listened to our show. It was something like 400,000 minutes, which translates to 313 days of straight listening if one person just listened to it, or the equivalent of 10 months of listening, which is kind of incredible. Way to go, everybody. Keep listening. I think that's probably why we get considered a marathon show. So good job, guys. People like Tim putting in their 1,500 minutes or how we do it. 85 countries reached just on Spotify, and 20% of our listeners binge 2 episodes a day, so that when they listen to Revive Thoughts, they would knock out 2 of them. I imagine, based on the way I did podcasts, that you're like listening to it on the way to work and then listening on to the way back, or something like that, maybe. Or maybe, you know, a really long workout, but I don't imagine that.
Yeah, 20% kind of surprised me on that. 20% of people listen to more than one episode in a day.
It's nice.
So there must be, yeah, there must be some activity or something that people are doing.
What? Okay, so the only area. Sorry. Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. I was going to say the only area where our Spotify listeners let me down is where we failed, guys, is that 5% of you would listen to a new episode within 24 hours, which means 95% of you are going to get this episode long after the 24 hours has ended. We got to do better. Okay, we got to listen to that episode right when they come out.
We don't have a whole lot of people hanging on the edge of their seat waiting for that new episode to come out on Thursday.
I mean, it's probably like that sermon's already 400 years old. Like, I can wait. can wait another week.
You can wait a couple days.
No, we got to change that, guys. We need to start putting like time pertinent information so you have to listen to the latest. I don't know how we do that. But that's maybe the goal for 2026, because that 5% felt, everything else was like, look at these guys. They love, oh man, we feel so loved. 5% of you listen in 24, you're really waiting around. You've got nothing. Is it because we put it on Thursday? And you're like, I'm busy on Thursdays. I got to wait till the weekend. I don't know. We'll work on that. But in all other ways, good work, guys. All other ways, good work. Okay. We also want to thank our new Patreon, Jennifer. Thank you for joining us on Patreon. It's kind of a low moment to come in now after I just chastised the audience. So I apologize for that, Jennifer.
No, I think it's a high moment. It picks it back up. But this is Patreon, Jennifer. How cool is that?
Jennifer doesn't seem like the type that would wait more than 24 hours.
No, Jennifer's a day one listener.
But even if she's not, you know, we she supports us. So very thankful. Whatever you want to do, Jennifer. Great work. We really nailed that.
Okay. Christosom. We've talked about Christosom before, right, Troy?
We have, but it has been a very long time.
It has been. John Chrysostom, born in the year 347. So again, a very old one. He beckons from the city of Antioch. His father died when he was fairly young, but his father was a high-ranking military officer in the Roman Empire. And so his mother had some connections and some sway and arranged for Chrysostom to get tutored. And with some of the best tutor in the town, right? This led to Chrysostom having a career in law. Libanus, the man that tutored him, is rumored to have put all of his hope into Chrysostom. And on his deathbed, he said, "I would have made him my successor had the Christians not stolen him from us." At 20 years old, he began to hear sermons of a pastor named Meletius. And that changed his life forever. I love that quote. "I would have made him my successor had the Christians not stolen him from us." What a great reputation. You know, like, I feel like that's, right? I want people to say that of me. Like, oh man, I would have made him president if he wasn't such a devout Christian over there.
If the Christians hadn't stolen that one from us.
Yeah, yeah, what a great line.
He had gone back and forth kind of earlier in his life about where his faith would be, but he really converted earnestly to Christ in this time period. He was baptized at around the age of 20 and began to live that faith out in a very sincere way. He went on to study under Diodorus of Tarsus. I don't know if I nailed that name right. And also, I'm kind of surprised I haven't picked on this guy to be like, we haven't got a sermon by him. Might have to go look up and see if he has any sermons, because he seems like a really cool guy. He helped start one of the major schools of Bible training at the time in the Roman Empire. The other one was in Alexandria, seemed to have been started by Athanasius, pretty big name. Diodorus is not as big a name, but the school of Antioch ended up being very important. And Diodorus himself kind of stood up to the Emperor Julian the Apostate, who tried to do a bunch of stuff. He was promoting Nicene Christianity at the time when the Arians were trying to kind of take back the empire. So a really important time period and a really good guy to have as your mentor. John's mom will also die not too long after this period. And because of that, Chrysostom will take a vow of asceticism. And this is this kind of thing that we see float through church history. It's not a thing as much anymore. I don't really know any ascetics really these days. And I think it's okay. But they really kind of took this approach that the material world was in and of itself bad, evil, sin-stained. And you can see where they get it from. I mean, there are Bible verses that talk about, you know, the lust of the flesh and the you know, the eyes and stuff. Like, there are things in the Bible that would make you seem like this world is bad. I don't think the material world that God created is bad, but they kind of take it to that extreme of, we need to reject everything in this world. Really, almost, I almost think it goes almost Buddhist monkey in the way they go, and not like a monkey, but like a monk-ish, maybe I would say it. And like, where they almost go like, I'm just going to reject everything. But that's what these guys do. And they'll fast for a long time. They'll close themselves off to the world, living like hermits. And again, I don't think it's something we need to bring back, but it's something they did. And Chrysostom was one of these guys who really took it to the next level when his, you know, going through maybe losing his mom and just struggling. He said, it's the quote I'm reading here says, he lived in extreme asceticism, became a hermit in the year 375. He would spend the next 2 years continually standing. I think about how often I sit. Like, you might be sitting and listening now. He wouldn't be. And scarcely sleeping, like trying to keep yourself awake, just making yourself suffer in this world, and also committing the entire Bible to memory, which is pretty impressive. As a consequence of these practices, his stomach and kidneys were permanently damaged, and he had really poor health. And if I recall, one of the stories was basically they forced him to come back out and living into the world. He didn't want to. He was like, I'm going to live a hermit. This is just my life. I'm just going to suffer. And like the crowds loved him. The people loved him so much that they wouldn't let him just die out there in these like hermit style vows, but they forced him to return. Maybe that wasn't what happened, but either way, it was pretty intense. I don't think this is biblical, but I do respect it in the sense of like, I don't think I could memorize the whole Bible and never sit down. I think that's more than I am capable of.
About 6 years later, he started to really preach. And in the year 381, we have accounts of him preaching in his city there in Antioch. People would come to hear him preach almost every day, and he was very favored. People loved his sermons. I think it's interesting because he has this nickname, the Golden Mouth, and that came from this era. People would come and listen to him, and they found him a really engaging, well-spoken speaker. And I find it interesting that, you know, 2000, for all of human, there's been people that have been gifted with, like, just being a good speaker. Like, there's some, because you've heard them. You've gone and hear someone speak, and this just captures your attention, and you're just engaged with what they're saying the whole time. And, you know, I don't have that gift, but there's just people that are blessed and gifted in that way. Chrysostom seems to be one of those people. By the way, people talk about him. At the time, it was common to make the Bible full of allegories, but Chrysostom had a more straightforward way of teaching. Here's an excerpt here. He says, quote, "Do you wish to honor the body of Christ? Do not ignore him when he is naked. Do not pay him homage in the temple clad in silk, only then to neglect him outside where he is cold and ill-clad. He who said, this is my body, is the same who said, you saw me hungry, and you gave me no food, and whatever you did to the least of my brothers, you did also to me. What good is it if the Eucharist table is overloaded with golden chalices when your brother is dying of hunger? Start by satisfying his hunger, and then, with what is left, you may adorn the altar as well." The church had become wealthy in this era. You know, I feel like the first 400 years of church history is it's quite the roller coaster. There's a lot of turbulence and a lot of wondering if the church is going to make it out. But this is kind of a good era for the church here in Rome, where it's thriving and being successful, and it is becoming wealthy. And this was one of the areas that Chrysostom was targeting and attacking. And, you know, with any, when you're calling out sin, you get a little bit of snapback. You get a little bit of your list of haters, right? And so Chrysostom definitely had his people that supported his way of thinking and people that didn't. And also, it was just kind of paired with this straightforward way of preaching that was a bit unique as well. It made him stick out.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of can't help but think, what else would you expect from the guy that spent 2 years standing and starving himself and memorizing the Bible?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be surprised when you make that guy, you know, your preacher, that he's kind of like, hey, stop having giant feasts. Like, what? You know, that can't have been a huge shock to you, right? Like, if you have a former Marine become your pastor, I mean, it's possible he'll be all about peace, but you also can't be like that surprised if he's, you know, if he likes soldier sermons or something. I don't know. I mean, it's a really stupid analogy, but you get the idea here. Like, it can't have been shocking that he was about that and not about the feasts and wealth. So I don't know. That just seemed like a dumb for them to be surprised by that.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
His reforms were very popular with the lay people. He ended up big parties between he ended the parties. Like at this time, the priests were having these parties with their wealthy patrons. Everyone was having fun, and he stopped. He kind of like in the city he was in, he was like, "We don't do that anymore. We're priests. We should live, you know, far closer to the lay people. We should be like them. We should live like Jesus lived. We're not throwing parties with wealthy people." Preachers would travel a lot during this time, and which is not bad. Obviously, Paul the Apostle traveled, but the reason they were traveling was because they would get paid every time they visited a church kind of farther away. So it was like a good way to make money, would just go to church and make money. And you wouldn't actually spend any time at your church because you were making all your money traveling. And it was kind of like a, you know, I don't want to say it was a system they had rigged up, but it seemed to me like it was kind of a, everyone was in on it. And Chrysostom just shut the whole thing down. He said, you want to do something? Serve the people in your local congregation that you were put there to serve. Like, why are you all on the travel circuits making money off of every town you go to? Like, get back home and do your job, basically. We're not going to pay you to do that anymore. Don't do that anymore. But some things that were more, I mean, these are all good things in my opinion, but something that would have helped the average person, he took some extra money and started hospitals. We've talked many times about Basil's hospital work and some of that in the area, and he saw some of that going on and wanted to continue it where he was as well. This led to him eventually getting into just a bunch of confusing conflicts. We could have spent the next, 10 minutes talking about this person and that person and all these different theological controversies that aren't alive today or are very different shape and form. Chrysostom did a good job. He held out the faith and he got in trouble. Eventually, this led to him getting exiled. So they sent him further away. However, his disciples and stuff were still getting letters and information from him. And they were so committed to his style that even though he was no longer in the city, his influence was so great that the empire had to like exile him further away because his people loved him and stuff so much. And it wasn't even, I don't even think it was the empire, or like the emperor or anything. I think it was just whoever ran that city had personal beef with him because he was such an influential guy. And so they sent him further off. Like, I didn't exile you far enough. I need to send you way out there. And as he was traveling out to wherever it was, he died. I can't help but think that his stomach kidney problems from his earlier asceticism partially led to that. But he did end up living to be like 59 or 60 years old, which compared to a lot of people on the show is actually not that bad. Like, he outlived, with his body damaged, he outlived like people on this show who, Robert Murray McChane only made it to like 29, and Andrew Gray made it to 22, or even Oswald Chambers who made it to 40, or I believe Calvin only made it to like 54 or something. So, I mean, he outlived actually a lot of big famous names on the show, despite the fact that he seemed destined to die younger from those earlier actions.
Okay. John Chrysostom, we're going to listen to a sermon that he preaches on John chapter 10. John chapter 10.
I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knows me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. John 10:14-15. It is a great matter, beloved, a great matter to preside over a church, a matter needing wisdom and courage as great as that of which Christ speaks, that a man should lay down his life for the sheep, and never leave them deserted or naked, that he should stand against the wolf nobly. For in this the shepherd differs from the hired hand. The one always looks to his own safety, caring not for the sheep. The other always seeks that of the sheep, neglecting his own safety. Having then mentioned the marks of a shepherd, Christ has put before us two kinds of plunderers. One, the thief who kills and steals, the other, one who does not do these things, but when they are done, does not care or try to stop them. By the first, pointing to Judas, that false Christ and rebel, and those like him. From the second, exposing the teachers of the Jews, who neither cared for nor thought about the sheep entrusted to them. On account of which Ezekiel of old rebuked them and said, "Woe, you shepherds of Israel! Do the shepherds feed themselves? Do not the shepherds feed the sheep?" But they did the contrary, which is the worst kind of wickedness, and the cause of all the rest. For it says, "They have not turned back the strayed, nor sought the lost, nor bound up the broken, nor healed the sick, because they fed themselves and not the sheep." As Paul also has declared in another passage, saying, "For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's," Philippians 2:21. And again, "Let no man seek his own, but every man his neighbor's," 1 Corinthians 10:24. From both, Christ distinguishes himself from those who came to spoil by saying, "I have come that they might have life, and that they might have more abundantly." He distinguishes himself from those who cared not for the sheep, being carried away by wolves, by never deserting them, but even laying down his life for them, that the sheep might not perish. For when they desired to kill him, he neither altered his teaching, nor betrayed those who believed in him, but stood firm and chose to die. Then he said, "I am the good shepherd." But at the time his words would have appeared to be unsupported by testimony, for he had not given his life. So how could they have life abundantly? So what does he do? He proves one from the other. By giving his mortal life, he proves that he gives life immortal. As Paul also says, "He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how will he not with him also freely give us all things?" Romans 8:32. What then is this to those who do not believe? Hear what he adds, "And I know my sheep, and am known of mine." As Paul declared when he said, "God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew." The Lord knew those that were his, I mean, whom he foreknew. Then, that you may not deem the measure of knowledge equal, hear how he sets the matter right by adding, "I know my sheep, and am known of mine." But the knowledge is not equal. Where is it equal? In the case of the Father and me, that is Christ. For there, as the Father knows me, even so do I know the Father. Why should he have added that expression if he had not wished to prove this? Because he often positioned himself among regular men. Therefore, unless anyone should deem that he knew only as a man knows, he said, "As the Father knows me, even so know I the Father. I know him as precisely as he knows me." When he said, "No man knows the Son save the Father, nor the Father save the Son," he was speaking of a distinct kind of knowledge and a type no other can possess. 2. "I lay down my life." This he says continually to show that he is no deceiver. So also the apostle, when he desired to show that he was a genuine teacher and was arguing against the false apostles, established his authority by his dangers and deaths, saying, "Far more imprisonments, with countless beatings, and often near death." For to say, "I am light, and I am life," seemed to the foolish to be a matter of pride. But to say, "I am willing to die," no one accuses any of doing that out of malice or envy. In this moment, he seasonably introduces a mention of the Gentiles. "For other sheep also I have, which are not of this fold, but them also must I bring." John 10:16. Look again. The word must here used does not express necessity, but is declaratory of something which will undoubtedly come to pass. As though he had said, why do you marvel if these will follow me, and if my sheep will hear my voice? When you will see others also following me and hearing my voice, then you will be even more astonished. And do not be confounded when you listen to him say, those which are not of this fold. For the difference relates to the law only. As Paul also says, neither circumcision avails anything, nor uncircumcision. I must also bring them. He shows that both Gentiles and Jews were scattered and mixed, and without shepherds, because the good shepherd had not yet come. Then he proclaims beforehand their future union, that they will be one fold, which is the same thing Paul also declared, saying, therefore does my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. What then? Tell me, was he not beloved during the time before this? Did the Father now begin to love him, and were the causes of his love? Do you see now how he used condescension to make himself understood? But what does he here desire to prove? Because they said that he was alien from the Father and a deceiver, and had come to ruin and destroy. He tells them, this is nothing else. This, if nothing else, would persuade me to love you, namely, your being so beloved by the Father, that I also am beloved by him, because I die for you. Besides this, he also desires to prove that other point, that he came not to the action unwillingly, for if unwillingly, how could what was done cause love? And that this was especially known to the Father. I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No man takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. Because they often took counsel to kill him, he tells them, Unless I will it, your work will not prevail. And by the first, he proves the second, by the death, and then the resurrection. For this is the strange and wonderful thing. Since both took place in a new way and beyond what anyone could imagine. But let us listen to exactly what he says. I have the power to lay down my life. And who does not have the power to lay down his own life? Since it is the power of anyone to kill himself. But he says it differently than that. But how? I have in such a way the power to lay it down, that no one can cause this death against my will. And this is a power not belonging to men, for we have no power to lay it down in any other way than by killing ourselves. And if we fall into the hands of men who plot against us, and have the power to kill us, we are no longer free to lay it down or not, but even against our own will they take it from us. Now this was not the case with Christ, but even when others plotted against him, he had power not to lay it down. Having therefore said that no man takes it from me, he adds, I have power to lay down my life. That is, I alone can decide as to laying it down. This power does not rest with us, since many others are also able to take it from us. Now this he said not at first, since the assertion would not have seemed credible, but when he had received the testimony of facts, and when, having often plotted against him, they had been unable to lay hold of him, for he escaped from their hands so many times. He then says, no man takes it from me. But if this is true, then the next point follows that he came to death voluntarily. And if this is true, the next point is also certain. He can retake it when he wills. For if the dying was a greater thing that man could do, then we do not doubt him retaking it. The fact that he alone was able to let go of his life shows that he was able by the same power to retake it. Do you see how from the first he proved the second, and from his death showed that his resurrection was indisputable? This commandment I have received from my Father. What commandment was this? To die for the world. But before, when he said, "Therefore does my Father love me," he shows that the first motion was voluntary and removed all suspicion of resistance to the Father. So here, when he says that he received a commandment from the Father, he declared nothing except that this which I do seems good to him, so that when they should slay him, they might not think that they had slain him as one deserted and given up by the Father, nor shame him with such reproaches as they did. Such as he saved others, but he cannot save himself. And if you are the Son of God, come down from the cross, Matthew 27:42. Yet the very reason of his not coming down was that he was the Son of God. He also tells us the reason why he does this. And what is that? That he is the shepherd and the good shepherd. Now the good shepherd needs no one to force him to his duty. And if this be the case with man, then how much more it so with God? When Paul said that he emptied himself, Philippians 2:7. So the commandment put here means nothing else but to show his unity with the Father. There was a division then among the Jews, and some said, he has a devil and is mad. Others said, these are not the words of him that has a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind? John 10:21. For because his words were greater than what belongs to man, and not of common use, they said that he had a devil, calling him so now for the fourth time. For they before had said, you have a devil. Who seeks to kill you? John 7:20. And again they said, are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? John 8:48. And here, he has a devil and is mad. Why do you listen to him? We should probably say that he heard this not for the fourth time, but probably even more frequently. For to ask, didn't we say correctly that you have a devil, is a sign that they had said so not twice or thrice, but many times. Others said, these are not the words of him that has a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind? For since they could not silence their opponents by words, they now brought proof from his works. Certainly neither are the words of those one that has a devil. Yet if the words do not persuade you, won't you be ashamed by the works? For if they are not the acts of one that has a devil and are greater than belong to man, it is quite clear that they proceed from some divine power. Do you see the argument? That they were greater than what belonged to man is plain. From the Jews saying, he has a devil. That he had not a devil, he showed by what he did. What then did Christ do? He answered nothing to these things. Before this, he had replied, I have not a devil. But not so this time. For since he had proven by his actions, he afterwards held his peace. For they were unworthy of the answer, those who said that he was possessed by a devil, on account of the very actions for which they should have admired and deemed him to be God. And how were any further refutations from him needed, when they opposed and refuted each other? Therefore he was silent, and bore it all gently. And not for this reason alone, but also to teach us all meekness and long-suffering. 3. Let us now imitate him. For not only did he now hold his peace, but even came among them again, and being questioned, answered and showed the things relating to his foreknowledge. And though called demon-possessed and madman by men who had received from him abundant benefits, not only did he refrain from avenging himself, but he even continued to benefit them. To benefit, do I say? He laid down his life for them, and while being crucified, spoke on their behalf to his Father. This then let us also imitate, for to be a disciple of Christ is to be gentle and kind. But how can this gentleness come to us? If we continually recognize our sins, and if from there we mourn, oh, if we weep. For truly a soul that dwells in the company of so real grief cannot be provoked or angered, since wherever there is repentant mourning, it is impossible that there should be anger. Where grief is, all anger is out of the way. Where there is a brokenness of spirit, there is no dissension. For the mind, when scourged by sorrow, lacks the leisure to be irritated, but will groan bitterly, and weep yet even more bitterly. I know that many laugh on hearing these things, but I will not cease to lament for the scoffers. For the present is a time for mourning and wailings and lamentations, since we do so many sins both in word and deed, and hell waits for those who commit such transgressions. And the river boiling with a roaring stream of fire, and banishment from the kingdom, which will be the most terrible aspect of all. When these things are threatened, tell me, do you laugh and hold yourselves so proudly? And when your Lord is angered and threatening, do you just stand there carelessly? Or shouldn't you be afraid, since by this apathy you light your own furnace into a blaze? Don't you hear what he cries out every day? You saw me hungry, and gave me no meat, thirsty, and you gave me no drink. Matthew 25:35. You will depart into the fire prepared for the devil and his angels, and these things he threatens every day. But, says someone, I did give him meat. When? And for how many days? 10 or 20? But he wills it not merely for so much time as this, but for as much time as you spend upon earth. For the virgins also had oil, yet not enough for their salvation. They too lit their lamps, yet they were shut out from the bride chamber. And with reason, since the lamps had gone out before the coming of the bridegroom. On this account, we need much oil and abundant loving kindness. Hear at least what the prophet says. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your great mercy. Psalm 51:1. We therefore must take pity upon our neighbour, according to his great mercy toward us. For such as we are towards our fellow servants, such we will find our Lord towards ourselves. And what kind of mercy is great? When we give not out of our abundance, but out of our lack. But if we don't even give from our abundance, what hope is there for us? Where will we have deliverance from those woes? Where will we be enabled to flee and to find salvation? For if the virgins afterward found no comfort anywhere, who will stand out for us when we hear those fearful words of the judge himself, addressing and reproaching us, because I was hungry, and you gave me no meat? For it says, as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. Saying this, not merely of his disciples, nor of those who have taken upon themselves the life of a monk, but of every faithful man. For even if he is a slave, or one of those that beg in the marketplace, yet if he believes in God, he has a right to enjoy all our goodwill. And if we neglect such anyone, when naked or hungry, we will hear those words from the Father to us, for good reason. For what difficult or grievous thing has he demanded of us? Isn't it actually one of the lightest and easiest tasks he could demand of us? He does not say, I was sick and you healed me, but just that I was sick and you did not visit me. He does not say, I was in prison and you broke me out, but that I was in prison and you visited me. In proportion, since the commands are easy, so is the punishment greater to those who disobey. For what is easier, tell me, than to walk out and enter into a prison? And what more pleasant? For when you see some bound, others covered with filth, others with uncut hair and clothed in rags, others perishing with hunger and running like dogs to your feet, others with deep hungry sides, others now returning in chains from the marketplace, who beg all day and do not collect even necessary food, and yet at evening are required by those set over them to give up their funds. Although you are like any stone, you will certainly be rendered kinder by visiting with them. Though you live a soft and pleasurable life, you will certainly become wiser when you observe the nature of human affairs in other men's misfortunes. For you will surely gain an idea of that fearful day and a better understanding of the future punishment. Dwelling on and considering these things, you will certainly cast out both wrath and pleasure and the love of worldly things, and will make your soul more calm than the most peaceful harbour. And you will reason about the judgment seat, reflecting that if among men there is so much forethought and order and terror and threatenings, much more then will there be with God. For there is no power but from God. Romans 13:1. He therefore who permits rulers to order these things so will much more do the same himself. 4. And certainly, when there is no fear, all should be lost, because even with such punishments hanging over them, there are still so many who go over to the side of wickedness. These things, if you wisely observe them, will be more ready-minded towards doing good works, and you will reap much pleasure, far greater than those who come down from the local theatre or party to entertain themselves. For when they leave these dens of pleasure, they are inflamed and burn with desire. Having seen those women hovering on the stage and received from them 10,000 wounds, they will be in no better condition than a boat tossing in a stormy sea, when the image of the faces, the gestures, the speeches, the walk, and all the rest stand before their eyes and besiege their soul. But they who come out from a prison will suffer nothing of this kind of distraction, but will enjoy great calm and tranquility. For the sobriety arising from the sight of the prisoners quenches all that fire. And if a woman who is a harlot and a prostitute meets a man coming out from among the prisoners, she will work on him no mischief, for he will not be taken by the nets of her looks, because instead of that pleasurable face there will be placed before his eyes the fear of the judgment day. On this account, the man who had experienced every kind of luxury said, it is better to go into the house of mourning than into the house of fun. Ecclesiastes 7:2. And so here you will show great wisdom, and there you will hear those words which are worth 10,000 blessings. Let us then not neglect such a practice and occupation. For although we be not able to bring them food, nor to help them by giving money, yet we will be able to comfort them by our words and raise up the drooping spirit, and to help them in many other ways by conversing with those who cast them into prison. Maybe by visiting we can make their keepers kinder, and we certainly will effect either small or perhaps even a great good. But if you say that the men there are neither men of condition, nor good, nor gentle, but manslayers, tomb breakers, thieves, adulterers, angry and full of many wickednesses, by this again you show to me a pressing reason for spending time there. We are not commanded to take pity on the good and to punish the evil, but to manifest loving kindness to all men. Be, the word says, be like my Father which is in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Do not then accuse other men's faults bitterly, nor be a severe judge, but mild and merciful. For we also, if we have not been adulterers or tomb breakers or thieves, yet we have other transgressions which deserve infinite punishment. Perhaps we have called our brother fool, which prepares us for the pit of hell. Perhaps we have looked on women with eyes of lust, which constitutes absolute adultery. And what is more grievous than all, we partake unworthily of communion, which makes us guilty of the body and blood of Christ. Let us then not be bitter inquirers into the conduct of others, but consider our own state, so we will stop this inhumanity and cruelty. Besides this, it may be said that we will there find many good men, and often men worth as much as all the city. Since even that prison house in which Joseph was had in it many evil men, yet that just man had the care of them all, and was, with the rest, concealed as to his real character. For he was worth as much as all the land of Egypt, yet still he dwelt in the prison house, and no one knew him of those that were within it. So also even now it is likely that there are many good and virtuous men, though they are not visible to all men, and the care you take of these gives you a return for your work. Or if there is none like that, still even in this case great is your reward. For your Lord conversed not with the just only while he avoided the unclean, but received with kindness both the Canaanite woman and those of Samaria, the abominable and impure. Another time he was with a harlot, on whose account the Jews reproached him. He both received and healed, and allowed his feet to be washed by the tears of this polluted one. He taught us to condescend to those that are in sin, for this most of all is kindness. What do you say? Do robbers and tomb breakers dwell in the prison? And tell me, are they all just men that dwell in the city? No. Are there not many worse even than these, robbing with greater shamelessness? For at least the ones in prison, if they have no other virtue, they do their robbing secretly under the cover of darkness. But many others throw away the mask and go after their wickedness with uncovered head, being violent, grasping, and covetous. It is hard to find a man pure from injustice. 5. If we do not take gold by violence, or such and such a number of acres of land, yet we bring about the same end by deceit and robbery in smaller matters, and when we are able to do so. For when in making contracts, or when we must buy or sell anything, we dispute and strive to pay less than the value, and use all our efforts to have it so, is not this action robbery? Is it not theft and covetousness? Do not tell me that you have not stolen away houses or slaves, for injustice is judged not by the measure of the things taken, but by the intention of those who commit the robbery. Since just and unjust have the same force in great and in little things. And I call thieves alike the man who cuts through a purse and takes the gold, and him who, buying from any of the market people, but deducts something from the proper price. Let us not then pass by our own faults and become judges of other men's faults. And don't let us, when it is time to show loving kindness, instead search out their own wickedness. But consider what our own state once was, and let us now be kind and gentle. What then was our state? Here Paul saying, for we ourselves also were sometime foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, hateful and hating one another. Titus 3 verse 3. And again, we were by nature children of wrath. Ephesians 2 verse 3. But God, seeing us as it were confined in a prison house and bound with chains, far more terrible than those of iron, was not ashamed of us, but came and entered the prison, and, though we deserved 10,000 punishments, both brought us out from there and brought us to a kingdom. He made us more glorious than the heavens, that we also might do the same according to our power. For when he says to his disciples, if I, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also need to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. John 13, verse 14. He writes this law not merely for the washing of feet, but also in all the other acts which he has manifested towards us. Is it a murderer who inhabits the prison? Yet let's not grow tired in doing him good. Is it a tomb breaker or an adulterer? Let us not pity his wickedness, but his calamity. But often, as I said before, one will be found there worth 10,000 others. And if you go continually to the prisoners, you will not miss so great a prize. For as Abraham, by entertaining even common guests, once met with angels, so we will meet with great men too, if we make regular trips. But if I may make a strange assertion, he who entertains a great man is not so worthy of praise as he who receives the wretched and the miserable. For the former has, in his own life, no slight occasion of being well treated, but the other, rejected and given up by all, has only one harbour, the pity of his benefactor. So to visit one like this is pure kindness. He, moreover, who shows attention to an admired and illustrious man, does it often for recognition among men. But he who tends to the abject and despairing does it only because of the command of God. For if we make a feast, we are told to entertain the lame and the sick. And if we do works of mercy, we are told to do them to the least and the poorest. For it says, inasmuch as you have done it to one of the least of these, you have done it to me. Matthew 25, verse 45. And knowing, therefore, the treasure which is laid up in heaven, let us enter the prison continually and make it our business. If you have nothing to contribute, contribute the comfort of your words. For God repays not only him that feeds, but him also who goes in. When you enter and awaken the trembling and fearful soul, by exhorting, promising assistance, teaching it true wisdom, you will then reap no small reward. For if you should speak in such a manner outside the prison, many will even laugh, being distracted by their excessive luxury. But those who are in adversity, having their minds humbled, will meekly attend to your words and praise them and become better men. Since even when Paul preached, the Jews often mocked him, but the prisoners listened to him quietly. For nothing renders the soul so fit for heavenly wisdom as calamity and temptation and the pressure of affliction. Considering all these things and how much good we will work both to those within the prison and ourselves by being continually mixed up with them, let us there spend the time we used to spend in the marketplace and in unseasonable occupations, that we may both win them and gladden ourselves, and by causing God to be glorified may obtain the everlasting blessings through the grace and loving kindness of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom and with whom, to the Father and the Holy Ghost, be glory forever and ever. Amen.
for listening to today's episode of Revived Thoughts. Today's sermon was narrated by Richard Root. Big thanks to Richard for reading our Christostom today.
If you want to read an episode of Revived Thoughts, if you want to help join what we're doing here, we would love to have you. It's getting close to that Christmas break. Maybe you got a little extra time. Maybe now's that time to put off that sermon reading from 800 years ago you've been thinking about doing. Let us know. Reach out to us. If you have somebody you've got a burning, passionate desire to read for, and we haven't done them recently, then we would love to hear from you. But if you don't have anybody, you're just like, hey, what do you got for me? We can also help you too. We have people all over the world reading from New Zealand. We've had people read from England. We've had people read from Canada. We've had people all over. But we also love just having everyday, regular listeners. You guys are what makes the show happen. So thank you. This is Troy and Joel, and this is Revive Thoughts.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.